Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle. Hello and welcome to the Property Planner, Buyer and Professor. As always, I'm joined by my two fabulous co-hosts, Kate Bakos and Peter Kalizos. How are you today, Kate?
I'm great, Dave Johnstos.
What did I just say?
You said it right. You said it correctly.
Yeah, yeah. We've talked about changing your name several times.
Ah, yes. Pete, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you, Dave. The weather is certainly warming up, which is fantastic. We won't talk about sport, but geez, that was a fantastic result recently, wasn't there, Dave?
Pete.
Mate.
Pete.
I won't say anything else. That's it. I must admit
I took two half days so I could watch the T20 semi-final.
Hey, guys, I've got to go. Record. I've got like 28 minutes.
All right, no more sport. Yeah. Let's get into it.
What an innings by Mitch Marsh, though. Oh. Unbelievable.
So my market update relates to the end of the year. And last year we saw so many agents work right through January. And in a couple of our cities, particularly in Melbourne, they were just really happy to have jobs and have work back on again. So we saw this incredible ability to work through, and literally people only had a couple of days off. And it's been a really heady year. We've navigated a lot of lockdowns and reopenings and really difficult inspection regimes, from one-on-ones to not inspecting at all. And now in our late spring season, across the board in a lot of our cities and regions, we're seeing an influx of vendor activity and lots of buyer activity, and agents are just really, really busy. I think it's fair to say that across the board, and most people would know that. Anyway, the difference between this time this year and this time last year is that agents and the industry in general are really determined to have a break. We're not actually interested in working right through. So we're seeing an enormous ramp up to the finish line, and a lot of properties are selling prior. There's a lot of activity and determination on the buyers, vendors and agents' part to get these deals done. So for anyone out there who is thinking of shopping, or they've got a pre-approval, or they're feeling a little bit tired with it all and wondering whether they should take the foot off the pedal, my advice is don't. If you're committed to buying a property, now is actually a very good time in terms of vendor and agent willingness to meet the market and to get deals done.
Yeah, it's a great tip, Kate. And there's evidence coming out anecdotally and also actually in the numbers that more vendors are having to actually reduce their asking price. There's that sort of general sentiment that vendor expectations are starting to have to come down to some degree. And it might be mainly due to that point, and then pick up where it's been left off come the new year. So it's a really great tip for some buyers who have probably, had buyer fatigue, and definitely some give up at this time of the year, don't they?
Mm.
And it creates opportunity for those who see it through.
Often, it's a seasonality thing as well, but this year is particularly amplified because of the fatigue and the sheer willingness to just get it finalized on the 24th of December. And I've always said December can be a great time to buy, because a lot of buyers start to get distracted with Christmas and other plans and fatigue. And you can suddenly find that you've got a large number of properties to choose from. And it might feel that it's busy with buyer activity, but you'll be surprised what happens when you get to auction day. We get a lot of phone calls on the eve of auctions from agents in December saying, we've just lost our three buyers. They've bought something else. They've changed their mind. They've gone cold, whatever it might be. And that can open up such an opportunity if you're committed to the campaign and you're the person standing there with your checkbook in your pocket.
I'll jump into my market update. So people are moving back to the CBDs of Melbourne and Sydney. We've alluded to, the contrarian view of potentially, if you were thinking about buying a unit, and particularly one in the CBD, that probably at some stage in the last 6 months was the time to do it. Not that necessarily, you know, most properties we believe in there are probably going to have low land to asset ratios and probably not stack up as the best investments, but there'll be a few rare hen's teeth in there that will actually have the unique attributes that will provide a good long-term return. So rental apartments across inner Melbourne has plummeted by 76% now since February and 56% in inner Sydney. That horse has potentially bolted to some degree for our listeners, but the numbers are backing up what we've been sharing as an opportunity with regards to units and I guess the bottoming out of that market.
And Pete, your market update.
Yeah, so mine's a bit big picture. I'm doing a Dave Johnson here and looking at big picture and not just Australia, but actually globally. So, you know, in a perfect world, I would be in Portugal today on our international property field trip, but because nobody's flying anywhere, we're all stuck here, but we're still communicating with our property professionals in Portugal. So I just wanted to get a comparison of how COVID-19 has affected the property market in not just Portugal, but Europe as compared to Australia. So I had the pleasure of speaking to one of the bosses of Cushman & Wakefield. They're a big real estate firm like JLL and CBRE. They're a large global firm. And we're on our lonesome so far as the effects on the property market by COVID-19. So when it comes to office property, he said many offices are looking to lease less space, but it's not as bad as you might think because even though there might be less workstations in each office because there will be people working from home some days of the week, people want more space around their workstation. So that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that before. Retail businesses are looking for smaller spaces, but they're going to expand their warehousing capacity. So retail is shrinking. And residential, very similar to here. You know, a movement from the cities to near city areas where people can commute and people looking for larger homes. Now, homes in many parts of Europe are apartments, so they're just looking for larger apartments, whereas here in Australia we are looking for larger houses. So lots of similarities. I couldn't see any differences. He said developers and investors are desperate to find investments or land or opportunities in the sector we call logistics, which used to be called industrial. So that's warehousing and manufacturing. Not so much appetite for retail and office, but certainly lots of appetite for building warehouses, storage facilities, which is exactly what's happening here. So, yeah, COVID-19 has affected property markets in a very similar way, not just in Europe, but all over the world.
Got a quick question for you, Pete.
Yep.
How do we go about membership on this field trip club of yours?
Yeah, I'm putting my hand up.
You'll have to enroll.
Absolutely. I'm joining you next year, Pete.
Excellent. Next year we're going to Dubai and Abu Dhabi and having a look at the legacy of World Expo, which I desperately wanted to go to this year, but I don't know if we'll be able to fly to Dubai. I want, because the Expo finishes in March. But, yeah, enroll and you can come along. See you there.
All right, we'll sort out the paperwork after this, Dave.
Can you have a couple extra sort of field experts coming along with you, Pete?
Imagine that. Yeah. A travelling trio.
Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
Today's episode is all about contrarian investing, and this is an episode selected by Kate. So Kate is in the hot seat and will be driving today's content. And as your host, I'll just be mostly posing questions, and the most experienced wise man in the other
corner. I'll just be nodding my head.
No, you're partaking as well.
Rightio, you're on.
You know all about this, Pete. Yeah.
You're on.
So the first question, Kate, and I do love the concept and the approach and the mindset of being a contrarian. So yeah. Can you explain to our listeners what is a contrarian?
Yeah, I'm going to read a definition. Contrarian investing is an investment style in which investors purposefully go against prevailing market trends by selling when others are buying and buying when most investors are selling. Contrarian investors believe that people who say the market is going up do so only when they're fully invested and have no further purchasing power. At this point, the market is at a peak. So when people predict a downturn, they've already sold out. The market can only go up at this point. Contrarians may be seen as courageous, unconventional, counterintuitive thinkers, able to withstand herding pressures and even abuse from crowd-following conformists. Interesting. Now, contrarian investing, we often hear a lot about that in relation to share trading and stocks activity, but not always in relation to property. But I know personally, I've met plenty of contrarian investors recently and historically, and it takes a really bold and brave person to be contrarian because it's a very loud white noise when the market is at one end of the spectrum. And it's a tough decision to do it. And I think just being contrarian without having a background plan and a fundamental basis for believing that it's time to be acting contrary can be dangerous. You can bet the farm, and if things go badly, you can lose it all. So I'm not talking about contrarian investing to endorse it or to suggest people should do it. It's really just to shed light on it and to talk about when I've seen it work well and when I've seen it work horribly badly.
Mm. Now, I do keep coming back to that client of yours very early on when COVID hit, who you said reached yeah. out to you and wanted to buy a number of properties. Yeah. And, you know.
G'day, JT, Paul Bananas. We give him a shout out all the time. He listens to the show.
And hasn't JT slayed them in the aisles?
He's done amazing. So, this is a guy that bought 4 properties in Victoria, Sydney Cider. Said to me, now's the time. Everyone doesn't want to buy, and I'm ready. And I've said it before on the show. I was a little bit nervous. You know, is this, is he being too aggressive? Anyway, he had a plan and he had the capacity to do it. And he had thought through the risk. He actually works in risk. So he absolutely understood what he was doing. And his fundamental basis for making that decision was because he felt that the market conditions were super conducive to buying a bargain, and that if he bought certain types of property long term, he'd do okay. Now, interestingly, short term, he's done brilliantly. And he's made quite a lot of money in a very short space of time. And he's done something that a lot of people couldn't stomach. In fact, when COVID hit, we had a lot of clients go on pause. And for one of our months, I think he supported my staff wages single-handedly. So, you know, it's not for everyone, but when you get it right, it can pay off.
So, Kate, back then in early 2020, to be a contrarian investor was to buy when everybody else was scared of buying. Right?
That's right.
So right now, what would a contrarian investor look like? Would they be buying or selling?
They'd be selling. And I'm actually fitting that description myself. We've got a portfolio and there are 2 properties there that I'd always circled and thought when it's a time that's conducive to getting a good sale price for these, we'll think about selling them. They're commercial properties in a holiday regional hotspot, and the demand for them right now is pretty high. In fact, it's disproportionately high. And we had a little twist a while ago with the Owners Corporation associated with a group of properties there. And it was a really tough outcome for us because the heightened OC fees just really started to erode what was a profitable exercise for a while. So we've made the decision to sell them and got a price that's quite pleasing. And I think that commercial property in regional markets, particularly in this sector, are looking up. So we've made the move to sell now.
Excellent. Well, I must be a bit of a contrarian and a conventional investor because I am selling one property, but I am also buying another property. So I've got an each-way bet.
Sitting on the fence, Pete.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, safest place to be.
Yeah. So, Kate, do you have any other examples of contrarian investing in property that you'd like to share?
Yes. Yeah, I do. I remember when the GFC hit, and at the time I was a mortgage broker. So I saw how tough lending got, and I saw how many lenders pulled out of the Australian market, and so many lenders restricted their loan-to-value ratios, which meant the buying conditions completely changed. And at that time, I knew of someone who was making the decision to sell his property because he thought that things were going to get really dire. And, you know, a lot of people did. And things did get dire in some countries, but not so much in Australia. Anyways, fire sale really started to, he was getting agitated and wanting to sell in December of 2008. And I was a willing buyer. And I made the decision to be contrarian. It was myself and my partner at the time, who's now my husband. And we didn't just stop at buying that property. We bought some others as well. And lending was tough, so I had to really make sure I had all of my ducks in a row and I had all of the supporting documentation, and I was well aware of the ever-changing credit policy, because we were making short-range unconditional offers to tempt desperate vendors to sell at a bargain price, and we managed that. And I remember at the time buying a property for $310,000 on the beach in Aspendale, and it was one that has remained a jewel in the crown for us, but that was a crazy price at the time.
Yeah. Well, I actually just did a little bit of research and looked at what happened, because I think what happens when a market drops is, you know, as we know to this episode, lots of people are fearful and they're worried about buying when the market drops. So I thought I'd look at what happened if people purchased when a market's fallen halfway, you know, 50%. Because let's say, you know, people take a little while to get organized and ready to buy. And as we know, a lot of people won't even buy until, you know, it's already risen a long way. So with the latest drop in the share market, the All Ordinaries was sitting at 3,327 points in Feb 2020, bottomed out on the 20th of March at 2,304 points. Within a year, it had risen back to 3,943. And as at 15th of November, it was 4,682 points. So if you purchased halfway down the drop, because, you know, all the conversation is about, has it bottomed out yet? So if you purchased halfway towards the bottom, and that was only within about 3 weeks of the market starting to tank, you will have got a return on your money of 65% over that period of time. So that's barely 18 months. In the global financial crisis, it was sitting at 1425, bottomed at 735, it had risen back to 1100 within 12 months. And then within 3 years, it was up at 1300. If you purchased halfway down, you would have got a return of 25% over the 2 years after that. And then I just looked at the residential property market during the last fall that we had. And if you purchased halfway down, within 2 years, you would have got a 20% return on your money if you got in halfway.
Capital growth and rental?
And that's purely capital growth.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Compelling.
Mm. So I think just to remind people, usually when a market's falling is one of the best times to buy. So, Kate.
It's so hard though, isn't it? It's so very hard for people to look around them and see all of the headlines. And the natural worry is how much worse could it get?
Yeah, and how long will it go for?
Absolutely. And I think there's a lot of merit in looking at the time of a downturn, how long it spans, how deep it goes, and look at historical downturns too. And they're all unique, but what is really interesting is focusing on the Australian market downturns and understanding how long they've typically run for. And I think a lot of people would be surprised if they looked at that chart, and I'll have to include it in the show notes because there's an excellent chart that that overlays all of the downturns that we've had over the decades.
Yeah, and there's a great chart of just what the property market's done, and you can see the downturns, the length of time, to your point, look like blips over the longer run. And I think the longest one is the most recent, which was also the deepest. And that went for about 18 months, which remember, it felt like a very long time as you're living through it. But in the scheme of our lifetimes, it's not that long a period of time, is it?
No.
So we've covered property market ups and downs on a few episodes, and I did a little bit of research, and I remember a couple of stark facts. One is when the property market goes down, the magnitude is not that big and the length of time is not that long compared to when the market goes up. And I too was scared when COVID first hit, and I thought, my God, what's going to happen to property prices? You know, even banks were talking about dropping by 10 to 15%. And I thought, you know, off the top of my head, I don't remember property prices dropping by that much. So I'll say I reckon they'll drop by 5%. But then when I did the research and looked at what happened after the 1970s, 80s, 90s recessions and the GFC, it once again proved that Australian residential property was very resilient. And even though there might have been a very short-term hit, the rebound was quite good. I can't say the same for commercial property, and the same is going to happen this time around. But, you know, going back to some of the feedback one of our listeners gave us is about, you know, when we forecast, we look too much into the past. Well, as a researcher, that's what I like to do, because otherwise you're really just guessing. Even if you don't look at the Australian property market, if you look at what's happening overseas, like the Australian property market is quite unique in a number of ways. But now, anyway, I'm going off on a tangent, but I just wanted to point out, yeah, certainly if you can pick the drops, you know, you're a much better person than me, because I certainly can't pick the bottom of a market or the top of a market. Certainly can't do that.
No, look, it is interesting at the coalface, you can tell when things are feeling pretty bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're all on the phone and talking and trying to work out. And none of us, we're right in the coalface, none of us quite know when it's the bottom, but you can feel when it has turned, changes. Usually within a few weeks. And that's interesting. You never want to be the first one to call it. But I've definitely felt it within that fortnight when I've historically looked back. The indicators are so subtle but so important.
Mm. So when you adopted the contrarian approach in 2008 with the onset of the GFC, what were the hallmarks of that particular buyer's market, Kate?
We had some heavy discounting, very, very rapid discounting. And I was obviously in lending, and I saw an inability to settle things. You know, we saw buyers not being able to borrow, and it was pretty messy. It did feel like an ugly time. And as a mortgage broker, I saw the types of borrowers that were struggling to borrow. And I was quite fortunate that we were in a position to borrow. I had a partner who had a stable, steady, salaried job. And from a borrowing capacity point of view, he could service the debt. I had a more interesting income because I was self-employed, but we were able to do it. And I could see that the opportunity was enormous. And we were reasonably young, so I made that decision to be a risk taker at that time, got the highest LVRs I could and, you know, bought some property. And we also then quickly saw our state and federal governments reacting to what was going on, and we had super low interest rates. And I say super low because they hit 5%. We couldn't believe it. And back then that was very, very low. And we also had a lot of stimulus. So we had first home buyer stimulus and all of these grants going. So I could see that the take up of those was quite hefty, and I believed that that would really underpin property price growth, and it did. So, you know, being at the coalface was an advantage, I guess.
And very similar to what's just happened, really.
Very.
You know.
Very. The hallmarks are so similar. I had so much deja vu last year.
Mm, extensive stimulus and significant rate reductions.
Yeah, very much.
I mean, it's pretty much the playbook now for governments, isn't it?
Yeah.
If we're in an economic downturn. So you've obviously got to have the ability up your sleeve to be able to make the most of an opportunity when you see it. So that's critical for a contrarian investor.
It is. I had a really interesting observation back in the day. And bear in mind, in 2008, we're winding the clock back almost 14 years, and I was not working as a buyer's agent. I was very familiar with property and I'd worked in real estate. But I had a director of the business that I was working within as a broker, and he had obviously built up a war chest or had, you know, savings, cash on hand and an ability to borrow. And he was quite aggressive. He bought a couple of properties of notable values in Brighton, of all places. And Brighton in Melbourne is a very blue chip suburb. It's by the bay and it's well known for its high price points. And I guess that didn't necessarily give me the confidence to go in, but it definitely underpinned a bit of confidence seeing someone in the industry doing that. And, you know, that was contrarian investing at its very best. And I believe that it rewarded him.
Mm, sounds like it would have significantly.
Mm.
They're both in Brighton. and decent properties.
Very much so. And I think when we talk about contrarian investing, it's not just in relation to a buyer's market or a seller's market. As we all know, properties and price points and dwelling types and cities don't all work in sync. So we can't just look at the overarching market conditions and say, right, now's the time to buy. I think being prepared to segment the market and focus on dwelling types or price points that are struggling for whatever reason and asking whether that could have some elasticity in it and could it bounce back. That's also a huge part of contrarian investing. And I've seen some people, you mentioned just before, Pete, that you're buying and selling. If those two properties are quite different and one is a bit exposed and the other one represents opportunity, you could be experiencing really exciting trade. And sometimes trading in a contrarian way can work in your favour. And a very close to home example that I have is a recent couple that I worked with who are right sizing, and they sold their property, which was their home down on the Mornington Peninsula, for a price that I was quite surprised by. And it was a very good time, a very opportune time for them to sell because the peninsula has been so popular. In fact, their suburb in Tuggeranong recently outperformed. And they right-sized into a big three-bedroom apartment in the CBD. And a lot of people would look at that and think, oh, my goodness, what are they doing? Because we haven't really heard a lot about apartment growth in Melbourne's CBD. But I would argue that they got that timing really, you know, exceptionally well-tuned. And I'm really hopeful for them that not only are they really happy in their right-sized property, but from a financial point of view, it rewards them.
Yeah, it really does feel like the holiday market, and particularly a location like the peninsula, is really, you know, hitting extreme levels. And we know the CBD market has really tanked over this period. But interestingly, the number of vacancies in the CBD took a sharp drop in the last month. So, yeah, it's turning, and, you know, it's actually a great example, isn't it, of potentially contrarian investing, trading in today's market.
Yeah. I had a lovely couple about 2 months ago contact me, repeat clients, and they said, look, we really want your support with this. We think that it's a good time to buy a good apartment in the CBD. And, you know, my alarm bells were going off for a minute there because we spent a lot of time talking about the downside to high rise. But I went over their strategy with them and chose to support them on the proviso that there were certain building types and special levies and issues that we absolutely avoided. And they nailed the brief. They did it so well. And I think they bought it at a great price because I was able to do all of the comparable sales analysis and look at past performance in the building and really be confident that they got a very attractive price. And it's a long-term buy and hold for them, but they're banking on the popularity of the city returning and the popularity of this type of apartment for city livers to be one that's held in high regard and has, you know, really strong buyer support behind it.
Just with that one, what were some of the unique factors that made that building and that unit potentially be an outperformer when it comes to a CBD apartment?
Yeah, great question, Dave. So not too many bells and whistles that make the owner's corporation fee super high. So things like concierge, pools, gyms, they can really add to the cost of running a property. Also cladding, it's always a big one. And a lot of buildings have already been assessed by the VBA and have been determined to be okay and not need any attention paid to their cladding. So fireproof cladding, that kind of thing. And also other issues associated with the building that need remedy or rectification that can stack up. We needed to make sure that the building had a clean bill of health and it didn't have any special levies in place now or on the agenda. And obviously, the location of the building, the floor plan, the layout, the orientation, the size internally, they were all really important things. And the position of the car space, the inclusion of storage, we had quite a lot of must-haves on our criteria list.
Yeah, those body corporate fees can be very high. Often they can be more than your council rates, more than your water rates. People certainly do need to beware if they are going to buy into a community-type property like that, that they're very, very conscious of those body corporate fees.
So can you think of any other contrarian opportunities, either of you, that exist in our current market?
Yes, I can. I think our current market, we've seen holiday hotspots on the rise, and in particular areas that are within a very long commute from the CBD, like longer than you'd want a hybrid CBD model working against you as an employee. So I think there's a possibility that we could see that they're peaked. And I also think that circling in on apartments, good quality apartments in our cities, is something that a contrarian investor should run the ruler over and ask themselves, is this an opportunity? But the most important thing I'll say about property investing is trading in it doesn't necessarily give you good returns. But when you're making a decision to buy something for the long term and treating it as a long-term buy and hold, you can definitely get some good returns. But you've got to pick the right property, not just because it's a bargain.
Yeah.
You know, not every bargain is a good buy, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, you've still got to pick the right asset. Perhaps the last question, Kate, before we move into the gold nuggets, what happens if a contrarian investor gets it wrong?
Well, you've got a few things that can really plague a strategy like this if you get it wrong. Firstly, if you've bought counter to everyone else feeling positive about it and then you decide to reverse your move, you're trying to sell something that's pretty unsaleable, you might find that you get a loss on the property or it's a long time going through the process of the sale. And the other thing that you'll kick yourself about is a lost opportunity. If you'd put your money into something that was performing, you'd definitely be sad about that lost opportunity and what you could have gained in that time.
Yeah, some great examples there. Very good. Well, any last words before we move to our gold nuggets?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, a contrarian investor who might have been traditionally a residential property investor may want to consider, say, commercial property, because many sectors of the commercial property market are not doing so well. But if you can reconfigure the building, in particular an office building, and maybe do some co-working where people have shared facilities like a shared boardroom, shared photocopier, shared tea and coffee making facilities, that could work. I certainly know that co-working offices in the suburbs, they are really booming, but you might want to also consider something in the CBD. That's certainly a contrarian investment strategy, but if it pays off, it could pay off in spades.
Love it, Pete.
Great example, Pete. So probably the most famous quote when it comes to contrarian investing that always gets trotted out is, be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful, as said by the famous Warren Buffett. So certainly something to keep in mind as we move potentially into the next phase of the economic and property cycle into the future. So, look, some great words of wisdom in today's episode from you, Kate, and also from you, Pete, as always. So I look forward to hearing your gold nuggets.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
We'll start with you, Pete. What's your gold nugget for today?
So mine relate to the three R's. Contrarian investing is a lot about risk, reward and research. So it's a lot riskier to be a contrarian investor, but the rewards can be a lot greater. And how do you mitigate your risk? By doing research. I mean, that could be said for any sort of investment, but in particular for contrarian investing, because if you get it wrong, you can get it really, really wrong. But if you get it right, it can be happy days.
Great tip, Pete.
That's fantastic, Pete. I'm going to share that. I'm going to use it. My gold nugget relates to those who wish that they could be contrarian investors, but for whatever reason aren't. And we all love the idea of a bargain. We'd all love to be able to say, oh, you know, I bought this property when everyone said it was a lemon and look at what's happened and it's done really well. But the reality is, if you're going for a good quality property and it's really important to you, particularly if it's a home, you need to be prepared to fight for it. And competition isn't necessarily bad. It might eliminate your chances of buying a bargain. But if you're going for something that has super high mainstream appeal, And for good long-term reasons, you can anticipate that that mainstream appeal will support its capital growth going forward. When it's your turn to sell it, or when someone else in the neighbourhood with a similar property puts theirs up for sale, again, they'll have lots of competition. So don't avoid a popular property when everyone is saying, you know, this is a very popular product and you'll have to pay a premium. It's not a reason to avoid it. Contrarian can be really exciting, but likewise, going with the mainstream herd long-term can pay off as well, because capital growth is driven by long-term owner-occupier appeal and usually relates to a property that has a lot of mainstream appeal. So don't let that stop you from buying something good.
Great tip, Kate. All right, well, that's been a very enjoyable episode and given our listeners plenty of food for thought. So until next week, I look forward to catching up with you again then.
See you next week. Great.
See you guys next week.
If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about investment strategy, take a listen to episode number 5, The Lifestyle versus Investment Conundrum. Episode number 10, Why Your Approach and Assessment of Risk is Paramount to Property Success. Episode 12, Property Cycle Management, Why Now is Always the Best Time to Buy if it suits your personal economy and you have a long-term property plan. Episode 19, Time in the Market versus Timing the Market. Episode 27, How Many Properties Do You Need to Retire Wealthy? Episode 31, Get Rich Quick Schemes, Number 1 of the Top 7 Critical Mistakes. Episode 53, Diversification 101, How and Why to Plan for Diversification Within Your Property Portfolio. And finally, Episode 61, Commercial Property Part 1, The Risks and the Rewards.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super products.
And the property buyer, Kate Bacos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, Chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.